I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. The marketing world is no longer ruled by word of mouth. It's ruled by word of mouse. It took 40 years for radio to reach 10 million users, 15 years for TV. It took only 28 months for Netscape to get onto 10 million desktops, and Napster pulled it off in less than a year. These are examples of what our guest this hour, the business writer Seth Godin, calls idea viruses. In the biology metaphor that the new economy loves, an idea virus is a kind of self-propagating marketing invention carefully cultivated and launched with the intention of spreading infectiously among more and more wired consumers. Instead of spending millions of dollars on roadside billboards or full-page magazine ads and Super Bowl halftime TV spots, a savvy new economy company turns us all into sneezers, as Seth Godin puts it, spreading the idea virus in geometrically expanding spheres. Seth Godin is giving his new book titled Unleashing the Idea Virus. He's giving it away for free online in the hope that the book itself could become the kind of idea virus that it describes. Maybe it's working, because it was the lead story in Fast Company magazine last month, and here we are talking about it today on The Connection. Connection listeners, are you feeling the effects of any idea viruses that you know of? Might you be immune? Or is all this enough to make you sick? 1-800-423-8255 makes the idea virus connection. 1-800-423-TALK. Seth Godin, welcome to The Connection. Have we all by now been infected?
Well, that was a great introduction. I'm ready to go home because you obviously totally get what I'm talking about.
I stayed up all night reading your book.
I think that one key point I'd make is that, like everything that happens in the business world, there's pluses and minuses to what's going on with idea viruses. And some of the things that are spreading through our culture and moving around quickly are things that some people would rather not have happen, but others are leading to, you know, having a VW Beetle or a fancy Macintosh on your desk, raising the bar for what a company can get away with what it sells, because they don't control the dialogue anymore. And because they don't control the dialogue, consumers can demand much better quality, much better customer service from the people they're dealing with.
Well, that to me is the big question about this whole idea. Are you pushing a disease, or are you trying to tell us as consumers how we can get on top of it? Literally, in a world of e-viruses, I mean, of idea viruses, where are we? Are we the targets? Are we the hosts? Are we the bacteriologists?
Well, for thousands of years, something that Richard Dawkins called memes have been spreading through our culture. And a meme is, you know, an idea that replicates and moves through the culture. Farming was clearly a meme. The hunters saw somebody farming and they started imitating it. So that's nothing new. What's new is that we went through an era of about 100 years where people made money by interrupting us. They'd interrupt our TV show, they'd interrupt our magazine, they'd interrupt our newspaper, they'd interrupt our ride on the road.
And supper time with a phone call, yeah.
Exactly. And that I call that interruption marketing. And interruption marketing got its comeuppance in the last 3 or 4 years because consumers said, I can shut you out now. There's so many channels for me to choose from on the web. There's so many media outlets that I can ignore you profitably and easily. And as a result, marketers sort of panicked about being ignored. It took a lot of years before people were able to talk intelligently about how we were being co-opted by the advertising and the interruptions being aimed at us. And what I tried to do in this book was describe a couple things. One, from a marketer's point of view, there is an alternative to interrupting people. From a marketer's point of view, if you make great products and get out of the way, people will tell each other. And from a consumer point of view, I think we need to be aware that marketers are doing this so we can be even more savvy about what word we spread and what we don't.
Talk about examples of people who have used this well, I mean, to their advantage and maybe even for the general good.
Well, let me paint a portrait of two competing companies. One is Kodak, and for 100 years, Kodak has sold photography. And what people do when they buy pictures is they take pictures, they mail them to Kodak, and they get back pictures, and maybe they show them to a couple of people in their family. Compare that to an internet company called Ofoto. What Ofoto does is it lets you take digital pictures and then upload them and then tell all of your friends where the photos are on the web. You then have your friends look at the photos and they can buy their own copies. So the difference is changing a private experience, Kodak, to a public experience, Ofoto. Another example is, you know, frequent flyer miles are very private. You have no idea if the person sitting next to you on the airplane has a lot of miles or no miles. If they could make them public and people were busy talking about how many miles they had, then it's likely that people would be more interested in collecting miles and doing stuff with them.
I like your idea in the book that if you spread the word at a convention that there would be a million frequent flyer miles awarded to the people who privately, as you say, had the same number, the whole convention would be a buzz with how many you get, how many I get, and we'd suddenly know it all. It would be down on the table, and everybody would be talking about frequent flyer miles.
That's right, and, you know, it's unlikely.
There's an idea virus right there. How do you get people talking about what you're selling?
Exactly, or it doesn't even have to be talking about that new Razor scooter that's everywhere. One of the smartest things those guys did was put the word Razor right there on the front where you hold on to it. So instantly, as soon as you saw someone zooming by, you knew what product they were using. The VW Beetle is another example of a virus that spreads whether or not the driver wants to spread it. When they first introduced that car, I saw a few of them in my neighborhood, and then I saw a dozen. And by the time I'd seen enough, I knew that I wanted to buy one. And I compare that in the book to the Prius, which is a high-efficiency car from Toyota that gets more than 50 miles to the gallon. It's a hybrid. I hope everyone goes out and buys one. The problem is it looks just like a Corolla. So you're not going to notice that Priuses are starting to take over your neighborhood. And so the message doesn't spread as well. And if I had been the marketer in charge of the Prius, I would have done two things. I would have painted it really weird colors, and I would have put a bumper sticker on the back that digitally output what my mileage was at that moment. Because then the more people who bought it, the more the word would spread.
That's interesting. But now, wasn't the VW Beetle promoted, first of all, by, long before we saw the car, we saw the pictures. But, you know, we saw them on billboards. We saw them in magazines, very traditionally, no?
Absolutely. And I would argue that that was money probably wasted. That, you know, if you're a car company and you've spent $1 billion tooling up to make a car, you're going to play it safe and drop $50 or $100 million interrupting people. But we're moving to a world where a company on the web, I'll give you an example, justatip.com. It's a very silly website that's designed to allow you to anonymously send a note to a friend if they have bad breath or they, you know, they don't shave very well, whatever. And there's a business there because they're going to sell advertising and mouthwash to the people who have bad breath and such. But how is it going to spread? Not by running ads, but when you get one of these, and a guy who I know got one, he then showed 50 people. Can you believe how silly this is? Someone sent me a note criticizing the fact that I'm a bad dancer. And so now 50 of us all got his note and said, who do we know that we can send an anonymous note to? And it spread very, very rapidly, and it's going to tip as a virus because it's a cool little clever gimmick that you want to tell a few friends about. I don't think it's going to last very long. But for a while, this site's going to get an awful lot of traffic for almost no money.
This is interesting. Seth Godin, I'm glad you mentioned the memes of Richard Dawkins, sort of ideas that had their own sort of evolutionary energy. This reminds us also of Malcolm Gladwell's Tipping Point, sort of restaurants or crime rates or new books or anything that gather a certain kind of buzz momentum. You also remind me of a book we did a few months ago called Radical Marketing, as in the case of Harley-Davidson, companies that basically turn their customers into their sales force, and they, you know, they ride the their ape hangers to Wisconsin in the summer to be with other sort of hog owners, but basically they're customers who have turned into promoters of a company product. All of these things sort of converge in the idea of the idea virus. How is the idea virus different?
Well, there's a couple interesting factors that go into it. And in the book, I talk about a formula of all the factors and how they fit together. One of them is the idea of the hive, that because we're so technologically and digitally aware with TV and everything else, we tend to think of ourselves as one giant community sometimes. But from a marketer's point of view, that's extremely unlikely. And The Tipping Point, which was a brilliant book, talks primarily about large audiences, but most things that tip actually go across very small hives. So, you know, one hive might be described as people who go to discotheques and clubs in New York City. And okay, among that group, an idea can spread, and then it just stops. And that the goal of the marketer, Harley Davidson is a fine example, is not to touch everybody, but just to touch the people in the target hive. Because if you can dominate that target hive, it's more likely to tip. If you try to dominate everyone, which is why Super Bowl commercials are such a ridiculously stupid way to spend money, you're going to run out of money long before you have a chance to do it. In Dawkins' world, memes are all sorts of ideas, not necessarily ideas that are unleashed intentionally, nor ideas that have anything to do with money. And in Gladwell's book, he's sort of describing things that tip as opposed to how do you make something tip. And what I tried to do in Unleashing the Idea Virus is lay out a plan that says, look, if you can target the right hive, if you can get the right people to sneeze for you, meaning tell their friends, if you can tell them what to say when they tell their friends, if you can amplify their voices, if you can get out of the way so there's no friction, and you do all of those things just right, it's much more likely to tip. And what's cool is I followed that advice with my book. I turned down a big advance from a publisher in New York City and decided to take my own advice and just give the book away for free. And so far, we've had 75,000 people download the book directly from my site. Plus, it's available on Amazon. It's available for the Palm Pilot and a bunch of other places. Our data shows that the average person is sharing it with three other people once they get it. Mm-hmm. And so far, in 3 weeks, 300,000 people have been, put in quotation marks, infected by this idea virus. And that's three times as many people who bought my last book in a year. And that was a New York Times business bestseller.
And then
so it worked.
So this is fame, my man. It's not fortune yet. Where's the payoff?
Well, the payoff comes in a few ways. And I have to start by being contrary. Just because people used to make money doing something doesn't mean that they have a right to make money doing that forever. You know, the fax machine wasn't good for Federal Express, but it still happened. And I'm not sure that in the long run, more people are going to make more money when ebooks are free. But I do believe that having your idea out there, the more people who know it, the more valuable it is. And being the creator of that idea adds value. So, you know, authors don't charge to be on Oprah or on your show. They do it because they want to spread their ideas. And how do they benefit? They benefit in a few ways. One, I'm self-publishing the book in hardcover. It ships in 5 weeks on Amazon. And the last time I checked, it had cracked the top 1,000 before it even shipped, which was pretty cool. And number two, and by the way, by self-publishing it, I make five times as much money per copy as I would make if I had a publisher publish it. So I don't have to sell as many to be happy. But more important for me is two things. One, I do a lot of public speaking, and this increases the demand for that. And second, I'm an idea merchant. What I do for a living is I invent ideas. And if I can create an environment where my ideas can spread more easily, it makes my life better. So we're getting subscribers, thousands and thousands of people who have given us permission to follow up with them. And that's from my other book, Permission Marketing, so that I can then send an email for free to thousands of people when I have a new idea and say, here's my new idea. And now I can bypass all the channels of media, all the stuff that slows things down, and go directly to people who want to buy stuff or who want to learn stuff and talk straight to them.
Seth Godin, what will the bottom line look like at the end of the year, at the end of 5 years? I mean, you'll be paying the rent, I take it.
Well, I mean, the math for this is, you know, we're about to sell the Japanese rights. We've already sold the audio rights.
Let the Japanese pay. That's a good idea.
Exactly. By the time I add up, you know, the revenue from various rights and speaking, I will be actually ahead of the game than if I'd sold the book to a traditional publisher after about 10 weeks.
Good. Let me just ask you, who is the sort of rabbit on this Greyhound track here? Who's your model? You're our model, but who's yours?
Well, I think that there's plenty of people on the net who have done it, but probably the first big one I can find is the Polaroid camera. It turns out my grandfather was the lawyer who incorporated that company.
It's 50 years ago.
Sort of ironic. Exactly. And what happened was no one bought a Polaroid camera because they saw an ad. They bought a Polaroid camera because they were at a party and someone said, come look at this. And that was sort of the beginning of intentionally getting people to talk to each other as these things went. When the web came along, and I've been doing stuff online for about 8 or 9 years, you could see it sort of rearing its head, but everyone ignored it because it didn't fit the model of command and control. Marketers like to be in charge. That's why they become marketers. And so a lot of marketers, including me, ignored this whole, I have to give control over to the audience because it didn't make sense. And then, you know, then we saw it through Hotmail and Napster and all sorts of other ones that spread with no advertising at all, that was a force to be reckoned with.
I'm still a little unclear as to whether, you know, as consumers, we should be rooting for the idea of RS or inoculating ourselves. I mean, it does empower the audience, but the same way sort of a wave does in a football stadium. I mean, we're all doing it whether we want to or not. Is this good for me or not?
Let's say you're an author. You've written a great book, but you don't want to spend the next 2 years of your life arguing with publishers. I would tell you, give the book for free to 1,000 people you respect, and if they like it, it's going to work. If I am somebody who runs an amazing preschool for kids, I would say, don't run ads in the local paper. Figure out how to get the parents of the kids who are already in your preschool to get new kids for your preschool. I think the people who win from idea viruses are marketers with virus-worthy products. And the people who lose are the folks who have nothing but cash to spend on advertising, but actually have a mediocre product with poor customer service.
1-800-423-8255 catches the idea virus with the writer Seth Godin. He's giving this book away online as a way to not only promote himself, but sort of test the idea that some ideas have a certain infectious power among us consumers. 1-800-423-TALK is our phone. Susan is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Susan.
There's some parallels here when they talk about creating a movie, when they sell a movie, the Hollywood buzz and everything. And sometimes things get out of, and what I'm interested in is continuation about the consumers and the inoculation idea. Sometimes things get out of control. What happens if an idea gets out of control of the marketer and goes in a way that they hadn't expected? Is that because the fault of the product?
For example, Susan.
Well, so there's a lot of movies out there, and they have different kinds of buzz, and sometimes there can be really good movies that still don't get seen by anybody. How does that work with your theory, maybe?
Well, I think that's a great point. Let me answer it in two different directions. The first is there are negative idea viruses that are actually more prevalent than positive ones. That, you know, if you ask someone who has had a horrible experience getting a high-speed internet connection put in their house, they're happy to talk to you for about an hour about how horrible that company was. And they'll tell 20 or 30 or 40 people how horrible it was.
Is Microsoft a bad idea virus?
Microsoft, in the book, I talk about the fact that 9 months ago, if you went to the Google search engine and typed in "more evil than Satan himself," Bill Gates would come up as the match. And that's because...
Now, Google.com, there's an idea virus.
Exactly. I mean, Google.com spent no money, but people told other people. But so Bill Gates spread a negative idea virus about himself, partly through his success and partly through, you know, the way that consumers felt they'd been treated by a monopoly. And rather than trying to counter it early and often, Microsoft let it run unchecked. And that virus got worse and worse. And every time Microsoft took an action that made people feel like they were acting to support that, it spread the idea virus even more. And so, you know, in the movie business, if you come out with a much hyped film, you know, an Ishtar or a Waterworld, it's very easy for the negative virus to pick up quickly because people want to hear the news about whether the movie's good or bad. In terms of the rest of the movie business, what's interesting is some people in the movie business are excellent at manipulating the way the virus starts. They can't manipulate it forever, but they can make sure that the right sneezers say the right thing on the right day.
That's the second time you said sneezers. Walk us through some of your vocabulary here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What's an idea merchant, and just who is a sneezer? Is this what Malcolm Gladwell calls a connector?
Well, let me start with the idea of idea merchant. I believe that most of the big profits that are going to be made in the future are not going to be made by owning a factory. They're going to be made by making ideas in whatever form that is. And somebody or an organization that makes ideas is an idea merchant. So Nike, for example, has no factories. They outsource that. But they just make up shoes and make up ideas and make up commercials to support them. The idea of a sneezer, Gladwell breaks sneezers into three different groups, connectors and mavens and folks like that. And I lumped them all back together and then divided them into two groups. Powerful sneezers are people like you, people who other folks listen to because...
Ma?
Yes, sir. because they respect their opinion and because they know that when they spread a virus, there's nothing in it for them other than your taste matches theirs. Then there's promiscuous sneezers. And promiscuous sneezers are people getting paid to sneeze. And stockbrokers are promiscuous sneezers. So are Amway salesmen or Tupperware people, people who have a vested interest in spreading the word. And one of the key things you need to do when you try to launch an idea virus is target the right hive of sneezers to get the thing kicked off. So the reason that I started the virus with with Fast Company magazine, his Fast Company magazine is read by 500,000 powerful sneezers, 500,000 people who love to tell their friends about what they just read in Fast Company. Mm. And so by targeting them, instead of having it run in a different magazine or no magazine at all, I was able to amplify the way that things started right at the beginning.
1-800-423. Talking about idea viruses as the cannibal.
Well, that's great. I hope religiously doesn't mean you only do it on Sundays, though.
Every day. I just have one comment to make, that the permission marketing, in my opinion, is really taking, as you point out in your book, and viral marketing as the next step to that, is really continuing on with what has historically been the sales process and building a relationship, a one-to-one relationship with a customer, and then gaining their trust and their permission to approach them with additional products and services based on your knowledge of that customer and the relationship that you've developed. And, you know, it's sacred not to to denigrate that relationship that you've developed. And you can, once you develop, you can blow it. You only get one shot. But I really think it's an extension of what's been going on in the world forever. And then secondly, I would just say that your book, for example, your free online publication is a great example of the viral marketing, because somebody was sold on it. I downloaded it, and now I've spoken to about four or five people, and now I'm sneezing all over Massachusetts. So I would definitely say that it works, and I'm a big fan, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Keep up the good fight, Rick.
Rick, thank you. 1-800-423-TALK. Teresa is on the line.
Hi. I'm a registered rep with New York Life, and I help seniors plan for their the cost of nursing home care. I'm wondering two things. Are you addressing the senior market in your viral marketing book that I'm going to download? And I'm also interested, since that block of demographic group votes, are you using any political examples in your marketing book?
Yeah.
How do you use these concepts in political activity.
I'm glad you raised the political question, Teresa. Thank you. Seth Godin.
Good questions all around. First, you can get the book, by the way, at ideavirus.com. It's only one click from there. The seniors are an interesting hive of people because they have lots of time on their hands. They tend to live in communities, but they don't interact with very many different people in any given day. And so what tends to happen among the senior hive is that the virus is very important, but it doesn't spread very fast. It actually spreads slowly. And one of the best things that you can do is find satisfied customers and give them the tools to help them spread the word. Give them extra brochures, extra business cards, or sponsor a coffee clutch where they can invite 10 or 15 friends over for a coffee that you provide and bring refreshments and such. Because if you can help amplify it across that hive, it'll go faster than, say, the college hive, which is very virulent and why Napster grew so fast. As for politics, I think it's really clear that, you know, all the money in politics is a real a shame. But the fact is that John McCain didn't spread because of money. He spread because his idea about campaign finance reform and the personality that he used to project it became viral. And so what we're going to see more and more, I believe, in politics is the death of the TV ad and much more of which parties and which candidates have permission to talk to the right sneezers with the right message.
There's a whole lot of questions there. I mean, John McCain did have the power of a virus, but he also lost. I mean, what was the power with which George Bush crushed him like a bug in the end?
Well, I think that, you know, just because something becomes a virus doesn't mean that the VW is going to be the best-selling car there ever was or that John McCain's going to get elected president. What it means is that without it, he would have been nowhere, and that he got as far as he did because of that traction. And so, you know, the Macarena became an important cultural blip because it became a virus. Line dances always become viruses if they catch on because you have to teach your friends how to do it to do the dance.
Right.
But it doesn't mean it's going to be the next Bob Dylan. It just means that it shows up on the radar screen because it took advantage of that virus.
But I'd just like you to sort of track the idea virus in politics. Last week with the Republican convention, I mean, that did have all the quality of a synthetic virus, a paid virus, a kind of wannabe virus. And then this week, the selection of Joe Lieberman, does that to be the vice presidential nominee? What are the viral qualities of either of those political stories?
It's a great question. I hope I'm not demonstrating my politics in my answer, but here we go. The Republican convention was not a virus. The Republican convention was a controlled marketing event designed for television to market straight from the stage to the person. And very few people who saw it picked up the phone and excitedly told their friends. So it didn't have the viral element. It had the interruption element. And it was masterfully done from that point of view. Yesterday, Al Gore decided to send a two-sentence virus around the world. Jewish vice president. That's all he wanted to say. Jewish VP. And that's all anyone said to their friends about it, right? But 15 friends told me, and it was news because people told other people who told other people. They didn't have a big examination of what did he vote 3 years ago on issue X, Y, or Z. There was a message. Al Gore decided what message he wanted to send, and that message briefly became an idea virus and then will fade away.
Let's pick it up after the break. The difference, among other things, between news and idea viruses. Seth Godin is our guest. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and PRI Public Radio International. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. Seth Godin is our guest. His book is called The Idea Virus. It's about the new medium of modern marketing. It's word of mouth more than word of mouth, but it's the contagious idea among consumers. Harry Potter must stand, Seth Godin, as a sort of idea virus. I think of Palm Pilot. I've never seen a Palm Pilot ad. Maybe I'm not looking in the right places, but that's something that's traveled on its own energy. This Abercrombie clothing chain strikes me, good or bad, it has the quality of an idea virus. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, there are different kinds. I mean, the thing with Abercrombie is whether you want to or not, every time you wear their clothes with the logo on it, you're selling their product. And the beauty of it is the people who are wearing the clothes want to do that. So it becomes a message within a certain opinion leader hive of 17-year-olds that spreads and spreads and spreads. The contrast that with the Palm. I mean, they did run some ads a while ago to help their stock go up, but basically the way the Palm sells is someone takes it out of their pocket and eagerly shows it to somebody else, one person at a time. It's gone a step further. Built into the Palm is a beaming function. My book is available on the Palm. Once you get it, you can point it to somebody else's palm, press a button, and 45 seconds later, it goes onto their palm. And that's a really powerful thing from Palm's point of view, because in order to do it, you got to say to someone, do you have a palm? Hmm. And if enough people ask you, do you have a palm, you're going to go out and buy one.
Go back to the matter of news, or as you said, Al Gore's two-word or three-word virus that he sort of posted yesterday, Jewish vice president. What is the difference between an idea virus and news, say?
Well, in the book, I talk about the idea that an idea virus adores a vacuum, that when something is filling a new hole in your brain, there's plenty of room to drive right in there. And the second time something comes along, that hole is filled and the virus spreads much more slowly. There's plenty of news that's important because it's an event. You know, France gets a new prime minister. That belongs in the newspaper, but it's not necessarily going to spread across the hive of Americans like a virus. This spread because it filled a hole. It was news in that it was a small bit of data that could, like a meme, move by from person to person with people just repeating the mantra over and over again. And that startled people. The second time someone picks a Jewish vice president, there'll be no virus there. It'll be news in that it needs to be in the newspaper, but it isn't going to spread like a virus.
What is the difference, you know, in political terms, of the fact that, as you say, the Republican convention was a controlled marketing event and the Lieberman designation is a virus? Does that add up to votes in the end? Does it shape the campaign that one's marketing conventionally and one is virusizing?
Well, here's the dark side of this. The dark side is that in order to keep spreading viruses, you got to do something that pops, that's very newsy in a virus sort of way. If the controlled marketing message breaks down as a way for politicians to win and it becomes all about spreading viruses, I'm wondering that politics will even get more superficial, because they'll have to keep spreading new ideas that run rampant, as opposed to having what little intelligent discourse we have left as moderated by the New York Times and NPR. So that's an interesting sort of a flip. There's no question that the reason you pick a VP this early is to spread news so that people think better of you. And I think that for a certain group of people, Al Gore sent the right message. For other people, he sent exactly the wrong message. I mean, it's always a double-edged sword.
1-800-423-8255 makes the connection with the writer Seth Godin and this whole idea of idea viruses. 1-800-423-TALK. Alex is on the line.
Hello.
Hello, Alex.
Great show as usual.
Thank you, Alex.
I have a question about the paid snoozers that Seth was referring to earlier. Seth, do you think that when you pay or compensate snoozers that you necessarily corrupt the message? And kind of a follow-up to that is, do you think there's a big difference in the offline and online world? In the offline world, companies like Amway get a real bad rap, but in the online world, compensated sneezers don't get the same bad rap.
What a great point. Good question. You know, I don't think you corrupt powerful sneezers every time you give them money if it's done certain ways. For example, Amazon has hundreds of thousands of people who get money by referring books on their website that you could then go buy at Amazon. And I think the reason that doesn't corrupt the judgment of the referrer is they get the same commission regardless of which book they recommend. So Amazon is paying them to make sure that the link goes to Amazon so you can buy the book there, but the referrer can recommend any book they want. And so their credibility as a powerful sneezer remains, and there are plenty of organizations that you wouldn't think are on the take that are happy to take the money from Amazon for making that link. Hmm. In the offline world, the thing that happens is we trust our friends with a certain amount of latitude that we don't give a marketer. They can call us at home during dinner. They can come over to our house during the Super Bowl. We'll drink a beer with them. And the minute they violate that and start becoming a professional paid marketer, it gives people a little bit of the heebie-jeebies. Online, we sort of treat everyone at a little bit of a distance. And unless it's a very close friend who's sort of interrupting you, we're willing to treat a website, whether it's put up by a person or by a company, as like a marketer all the time. And for that reason, there hasn't been nearly as much backlash about people who are rewarded for spreading the word.
Does this all threaten the big marketers with extinction, or will they take it over sooner or later?
Well, the cool thing is they can't take it over. When I started talking about permission marketing a couple of years ago, the first question big marketers asked is, well, how do we rent and sell lists with permission? And the answer is you can't. You have to earn it yourself. And the big guys have been unable so far to do that. And this is another example. So I think we're going to definitely see networks put into place of, you know, Sony's going to build a network of people that when they release a new movie, they can pump something through the pipeline. But the fact is that distributed networks of millions of people have always been very resistant to the man in the middle using money to sort of take over. And Linux versus Microsoft is a great example. Hmm. When Microsoft was just talking to the IT people, the Fortune 500, it was pretty easy to be in charge. But when it became a million people deciding what operating system to install, Linux is able to get 2 or 3 or 5% impact, because no amount of money can get in the way of the conversation they're having privately with an interested individual.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-423-8255 catches the idea virus with Seth Godin. Phil is calling from Cambridge.
Hey, Chris, another great show. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil.
What I'm wondering is if I think you may have just sort of answered my question in advance, but what I'm thinking is that in traditional marketing, it seems like the value that a marketer brings is that he can promote an inferior product over a superior product. And common knowledge, as I've heard it, is that that's why Microsoft got so successful, because they were able to take inferior products to market quickly and beat out people who spent years and years developing really good products. So what value does a virological marketer bring to the market if only the good products are going to succeed as viruses anyway?
Well, great point. And my answer is it raises the bar because you have to make a great product. At whatever definition of great is, word isn't going to spread as well. And so
are there no examples of bad products that became idea viruses?
Well, I think that if you read a lot of the reviews of the Blair Witch Project a year later, a whole bunch of people say it wasn't a very good movie. I haven't seen it, so I can't comment, but it certainly became a virus. Didn't succeed because of advertising.
Almost everybody likes Harry Potter, but not quite everybody.
Well, I don't know about those folks. I won't tell my kids there's anyone who doesn't like Harry Potter. Let me tell you about an interesting product out there called Gazooba that we're using on our site. If you go to ideavirus.com, there's a button that says tell a friend about this virus. And then it takes you to a page where you can type in the email addresses of up to 5 friends, and it sends them all a note that says, I just discovered this idea virus book. You might want to come read it. Gazooba lets us track how many notes each person sent out, not by name, but in aggregate, and what percentage of people who got the note came back and did what we asked. 50% of the people who get a note from a friend come to the site, and almost all of them actually download the book.
We've got to do that on the Connection webpage.
You should.
Tell and a friend, right.
It's a very neat service, but what's so cool about it is if you send junk mail to 100 people, on average, one person does what you ask. And here we're talking about 50% of the people doing what their friends asked them to do. And that, in a nutshell, is the difference.
Interesting. 1-800-423-8255, the Idea Virus Connection. Lauren is on the line.
Hello.
Welcome, Lauren.
Hello.
Hello.
It was Kismet that I tuned in today, as I'm on the cusp of a career change from project management consulting to teaching yoga to kids in a rural area.
Kismet on the cusp. Go for it.
Yeah. And your whole idea of creating that ripple effect really, really intrigued me. As you might understand, I have a fairly low advertising budget, and was wondering if you could offer some concrete steps as to how to create that ripple with the parents and clients that I have thus far, and secondly, if it would be worth it to me to create a website in such a blessedly low-tech business.
Well, let me start with the first. Kid marketing is always problematic because you don't want to try to take money from a 5-year-old. But there's a couple things that I'm discovering with my kids, both ASO soccer and karate, where you wear a uniform. Because before and after, you see kids all around town wearing these uniforms. And there's no question that my kids have been infected by seeing other kids walking around dressed in funny clothes. And one of the interesting things about yoga and massage is they tend to be very private experiences. And one of the things that I would do, especially if I was marketing it to kids, is figure out how to make it more public. Maybe I teach my yoga classes in the park so people can see me doing it. Or maybe there is some special yellow belt that kids in my yoga class wear all the time so that other people say, why are you wearing that silly yellow belt? And a conversation can ensue about how cool it is. As for websites, I'm really in the minority about this. There are more than 40 million corporate websites today. That's out of 160 million people on the web, there's 4 people per site, not very good odds. So I wouldn't build a website unless you had a mechanism in place to let strangers know your website exists. If you don't have that mechanism in place, it doesn't pay to have a website. I would spend all my effort on email and on just talking to people one at a time.
Seth Godin, I wish you'd talk a little bit about the kid hive here, kids as a hive. What works, what doesn't work with kids? Do they have any immune system, any discrimination about the idea of viruses that are pitched at them?
Well, we'll start with the discrimination. They have none. Kids don't know whether it's good or bad for them. Witness underage cigarette smoking as an example, which Malcolm Gladwell does a beautiful job talking about in his book. It's clearly not in the interest of any gene in your body for the meme of cigarette smoking to spread, but clearly it spreads through the hive very quickly because of the way people interact with each other. At a younger age, you take a look at Pokemon, and there's no rational reason in the world for Pokemon cards to sell for $50 a piece, but they do. Mm-hmm. And if you could figure out why and how to replicate it, you'd be rich, and no one knows how to replicate it because it's sort of random. What we do know is that certain kids can unleash a virus and other kids can't. And we know that there are certain ways that you can create frictionless methods for people to spread the word. Every 7 years, like clockwork, yo-yos take off again as a fad. Hmm. And the reason is because you can't yo-yo in private. You yo-yo at school, other kids see you yo-yoing, and then they rush to the store to go buy a yo-yo.
This is a circadian idea virus. Yeah,
it takes off, and then it has to die out again before the cool enough kid will start yo-yoing to show that he's a fashion leader. Right? There are certain kids who are the first ones who have to show the rest of school that they're cool. They're the ones who had a razor a year ago. The kids who are buying a razor today are having fun with it, but they're obviously not the fashion leaders. They're not the ones that are ready to go first.
Fascinating. 1-800-423-8255, the idea virus with Seth Godin. 1-800-423-TALK. Scott is on the line.
Hello.
Welcome, Scott.
Good morning, Seth. Big fan of yours. Good morning, Chris.
Thank you, Scott.
I hope I'm not breaking up here. I'm on a cell phone. I had to pull over because it's just so interesting. Are you still there?
Yeah, we're here, man.
Oh, excellent, excellent. One of the interesting things that I deal with pretty much on a daily basis is I have a band. And, you know, learning we can get to that next level and get more people to come to shows and more people to buy albums and more people to just basically, you know, create that popular phenomenon where people just want to be part of it.
Well, and the Bobby Soxer squeal, I know.
Yeah, and it will just take off. And one of the things that we figured out that we could do was pretty much to make all of our music free so that people don't have to buy it, you know, and then they can just download it. But one of the things that we have been doing is with our insert that we go into the CD, that's the part that you have to get from us. And that's kind of like withholding a little bit of the product. You know,
what's in the insert?
Yeah, well, the insert would be, you know, the bio, the storybook that goes along with the songs. The thing that you would buy, if you were buying the CD, that would be the thing that you would want. Because obviously you can just download all of the other songs in the chronological order. But I guess one of the questions I have, and I didn't realize that I could even ask a question, is what would be the thing that would take that to the next level? Because it seems to me like, you know, with the whole copyright thing and the record companies and that fight that's going to be going on, it seems like that there's a margin there for somebody to step up and take control of a whole new marketing way. Maybe the way we're doing it, maybe a different way. But I think that something like that, as soon as it caught on, like, that would just take off.
Seth Godin, what's the counsel here to garage bands?
I was hoping a musician would call in. Let's start with this. When radio first came out, the record companies hated it. They said, what do you mean you're going to play our records on the radio for everyone to listen to without paying? And then MTV came out and they hated that because they said, what do you mean you're going to show our music videos and not pay us? And every single time the record guys have been wrong because they don't understand deep down that the more a song gets played, the more it's worth. And Napster is the best friend of the record business, not the worst enemy of the record business, because people who have it listen to more music. If your band gets listened to more, then you're going to make plenty of money in tons of other ways. Grateful Dead doesn't make money from records. The Grateful Dead, when they were touring, made money from tickets and T-shirts, not from selling the bootlegs that other people were spreading. Mm-hmm. And what the internet does, what radio did for records, the internet does for entrepreneurs and ideas. And what I would tell a garage band is a few things. One, swear off making any money at all for a year. Everything you do, do it for free to get the word out there. Because if you tip, if you pop, if people have your music in their head, then you'll make plenty of money later. And there's, you know, work at McDonald's during the day. Do what you need to for a year to spread the word. And that means giving away all your music. It means every time you do a gig, setting up a thing where if someone comes in a party of four or more, three of them get free beer. Because that means that someone who likes you has to find three friends to bring with them to introduce them to your band. It means coming up with songs that appeal very clearly to specific hives of people and then going after that hive and letting them know that the song exists. So that the idea of being a band today is not how do I sell my first record at 10 bucks a piece. It's how do I get a million people to hear my song once? Because if I can make that happen, then there's plenty of systems in place for me to break through and make money.
So do you worry about the future of intellectual property in the world where everything is free?
Well, I'm fairly confident that digital stuff, which means ebooks and music and things like that, unless it's very timely or going to a very specific group of people with plenty of money, is going to become free. Hmm. That, you know, there's 50,000 books published in America every year, and that means there's 500,000 books that are out of print that are still good. And if I was one of those authors, I'd take my book, which is Gathering Dust and Making No Money, put it online for free. What have you got to lose? Maybe it'll catch on. And as soon as people start doing that, and I've heard from plenty of authors who have looked at my example and decided to do it, then the only people who won't have to do that are people with a brand new book who have subscribers. They'll send a note. Stephen King will send a note and say, my new book's ready, and for the first week, if you want to read it before anyone else, it's $5. Yeah, he can sell a million books that way, and good for him. But the real profit's going to be made by giving the stuff that can't be replicated, the live appearances, the physical goods, the souvenirs. You know, my book costs $40 for a reason. Because I'm saying to people, look, if you want to just know the idea, you can have the idea for free. Mm. But if you want the hardbound, beautiful souvenir, you got to go to Amazon and buy it for $40.
That's why Connection T-shirts go for $500 a piece.
I'll take one.
1-800-423-8255. Jim is on the line.
Hello, Chris, and your guest.
Welcome, Jim.
It's a great program, as usual.
Thank you, Jim.
About the mid-50s, there was a book published, you might have seen it, called The Space Merchants, in which this very thing of manipulating public opinion by means of gossip channels, is what they amount to, resulted in tremendous concentrations of power. The book might have been called The Spin Merchants, as well as The Space Merchants. The idea was that they were selling this hugely expensive venture to go to Mars, get people to go there by pushing all their patriotic buttons and their adventure buttons and everything else. And this was something which was described, the mechanisms of manipulating public opinion were described in the book very, very well. It was a very interesting book, even though it was sort of classified as a futurist book. It described some of the mechanisms you're talking about the Internet.
Seth Godin?
Well, I really want to check that one out. I hope I can find it. I think that the key difference today, and maybe it was futuristic, is digital word of mouth leaves a trail. And that's a huge difference from the old days, meaning that if someone did a bad customer service 7 months ago, you can still find all the complaints online. If you want to watch where the breadcrumbs came from, how a movie studio promoted the Blair Witch Project or something else, you can find those crumbs. And as a result, it becomes a really fascinating permanent record of what went before. And as a result, consumers get way smarter about how they got manipulated.
Seth Godin, this is fascinating. I wish you just tell the folks once more where they find your book and the other goodies they get on your page. Where do we look?
The easiest place is www.ideavirus.com. It's also on Amazon. It's also at thepeanutpress.com.
Seth Godin, thank you. Connection listeners, you can continue the whole conversation about Idea Virus on our webpage at theconnection.org. Thanks for help today from Michael Garth, Dan Springer, Gavin Steckler, Tim Monroe, and Kim Bichari. The viral producers of The Connection are Catherine Bidwell, Dan First, Hitesh Hatti, Jill Kaufman, Amy McDonald, Jake Shapiro, and Keith Shields. Mary McGrath is our senior sneezer. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
This is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Digital Photo Factory, integrating art and technology, providing digitized images for the web and print advertising world. Information at thedigitalphotofactory.com. And by ATG, a provider of e-commerce and personal